Thank you, Fran, for having me over here. It's a real nice pleasure to be here and talk to you. And my voice is maybe a little bit wonky after last night, but hopefully I will be able to tell you all the story about ladybird beetles this time. And the question is, are you making any progress on phylogeny of ladybird beetles? I say a little bit. It's not a very big progress, but definitely we know much more than we knew before, and we knew very little initially about the phylogeny of this group. And hopefully within the next 4 or 5 years, there are several projects ongoing that will report some new things. So today I will rather talk more about diversity and about ladybirds themselves than about the phylogeny. The whole group started very early, and because everybody loves ladybirds, everybody knows them, and for some mysterious reason, that's probably one of the very few groups of insects that people are not afraid of. Even the normal kind of not entomologist people, they just are not afraid, and they are very regarded very well and spoken very well in all the cultures, including my own country, where I come from Poland. The Linnaeus, when he described the genus Coccinella, and he described 36 species, and he diagnosed the beetle as something which is convex dorsally, flat ventrally, has got a capitate antennae, and also expanded last segment of the palpi. That was whole description of a genus Coccinella, but it was pretty good actually. And in these 36 species, he included some sylphids and probably one erotilid as well. But most of them were actually coccinellids. So over the years, the number of the species progressed, and they were all classified in still genus Coccinella until Kugelan erected another second genus, Scimnus. And from this point on, there were two genera in whole group coccinellid. And nothing really happened much until Etienne Moulsan, when he in 46 and then in 53 basically monographed whatever was available. So he amassed the whole collection of the ladybird beetles, and he described all of them. And he described more than 1,200 species. And he directed all the genera that we know more or less now, all the common ones, and he erected all the groups of the coccinellas that we now recognize as the tribes. So basically, after Moulsan, Crotch bought his collection, because Moulsan was not very keen collector, and he didn't keep his own collection. So everything either he borrowed or he sold. So he sold all to Crotch, and Crotch kind of monographed the whole family by producing the catalog and describing new taxa, and basically erecting couple new genera and several new species. So at that stage in 74, we had 137 genera and about 1,400 species. So where they belong right now? They belong to the Polyphaga, superfamily Cucugioidea, and as we have heard some other talks, they belong to the group that Roy Crozon erected, that is called Cerulonis series. And among them, there is 8 families right now, there will be more, and they usually are classified as a kind of a derived cucugioids. We don't know exactly how they are. There's usually two groups that are being mentioned as a potential sister group. They have now been kind of tested, so they are either endomycids or they are coralophids. This particular one looks like endomycid and used to be an endomycid. There were some doubts, and in one of my talks at ESA, I started to kind of disassemble the subfamilies of in Cerulonis series, and I postulated that endomycids are not monophyletic, and Botryderes are not monophyletic, and Cerulonis are not monophyletic, but Coccinella itself were probably still sister group of endomycids. That has been further corroborated by James Robertson and the Hunt as well, so we now more or less believe that there are at least still not completely resolved issues about the sister group relationship, because we have sometimes like three notes here, but either endomycids are probably truly the sister group, although some of the endomycids have been taken over to the Coralophidae. This is the picture of the smallest and the largest ladybird that we know of. So they are really very small, very small. This is the genus Carinodulina, this is one of the big Mononida. And right now they are classified into seven subfamilies, numerous tribes, and it's definitely about 400 genera right now. They are new being described quite frequently. We know about 6,000 species, and this is the Sais range. They are all over the world, so they are very common. They are characterized that don't have any frontocubital suture. The mandible usually have a molar, but the molar is smooth. It's usually kind of a tooth-like molar. There is usually two apices on the mandible. As Linnaeus has noted, they usually have antennal club. Sometimes it's a very solid club, sometimes it's a loose, and sometimes it's really not very distinctive, but there's usually something there. The tarsi are three or four segmented, but usually at least two tarsomeres are kind of lobed, and they have spongy seedy underneath, and the claws are usually appendiculate or split sometimes, so there's usually a kind of basal tooth over there. And in most of the ladybirds, not in all, the last segment of the maxillary palps is expanded to a various degree. But actually, what we can count as the apomorphy for the ladybirds is the male genitalia, which are very complex. And for what we would say in the Cerulonis series is a kind of a very unusual character. Usually the tegmen has got an extra kind of a central lobe, which I call a penis guide, more or less, and they are parameres, and sometimes the basal lobe is prolonged, and usually there is an extra strap here. Although the penis itself, what they used to call cipher, is a very sclerotized, heavily sclerotized rod, sometimes, and most of the cases, is kind of a T-shaped base. Talking shortly about what is being recognized and was not recognized in ladybirds is probably the first man after Moulson who started to seriously thinking about the phylogeny of ladybirds was Hiroaki Sasaji, who unfortunately died a short time ago. He did his PhD in 1969, where he tried, based on comparative morphology of adults and larvae, to elucidate a little bit how the ladybirds are truly related. So he recognized seven subfamilies and several tribes, and his kind of discovery or idea was that there is a group of ladybirds that they have very narrow palps, the last segment of maxillary palps, and this is the group what he called Stycholotidines. The Stycholotidines that by Weise and by some other people were usually called pseudo-coccinellidae or something which is not typical coccinellidae, because some of them had really very narrow and sometimes even pointed terminal segment of maxillary palps, and also some of them had relatively narrow tarsi, not very spongy, not lobed, and they were very small and really very hard to study at that time. So since Sasaji, nothing really happened for a long time. The people all over the world were working more or less on a very regional scale. And that was the problem in a coccinellus, is that the people in North America, in Africa, in Europe, they were working on a very regional scale, applying this Sasaji classification to their local needs, kind of modified, added one tribe or two, or maybe sometimes moved some things from one tribe to another, but really nobody really looked across the globe. And even the people who were working at that time in the 60s, 70s, was like five of them, and they were definitely corresponding with each other and sending their papers, but they probably never read most of the papers of their kind of people at the same time, contemporaries. So that created a lot of kind of problems with compatibility between all those classifications. And Ivo Kovács, the Czech guy, in 1993, has published kind of the first pass through the major groups, and he is a reasonably good morphologist. He looked mostly for the adult characters, but some larval as well, and he basically supported a lot of Sasagi classification, but hence started to removing some of those groups and trying to group them together. And all this, where's my answer? All those groups that Sasagi recognized as Stycholotidines were still, according to him, fairly basal to all the other coccinellates. But then he split them into two major groups as well. And he recognized one extra super as a family or Ortolani based on the two tribes. When I was working on Australian ladybirds, I started to think, well, I should probably do something across the globe. And I started developing a matrix of the all adult and larval data. And after I've been coding this matrix for, I don't know, maybe half a year or so here and there, and finally started analyzing that, I got frustrated. I couldn't get any good results. And there was a major problem. I said that there's no way I can get any good resolution from my matrix. And at the same time, Adriano, who is working with John McHugh, was working on molecular data set, and we hope that maybe we can combine those at some point and get some good resolution. Unfortunately, his tree is not providing a lot of support for the taxa that we hoped. But definitely what I could find, and that is also supported by molecular data, is that there are two major groups in coccinellates. The one which has to be called Microvisiani, because that's where the Microvisia is being placed, and the rest of the coccinellates. When we look at those Microvisiani, those are the very tiny, small creatures, usually having head kind of directed a little bit ventrally. They have narrow palps, sometimes kind of subparallel. They don't have actually molar at all. They have very heavily sclerotized spermatheca, which is very often kind of a double, which is quite interesting. And what is the most important character is the tegmen. The whole tegmen is just asymmetrical. It's completely asymmetrical. So these are the parameters. Actually, this couple of CT here are the parameters, and the whole tegmen is just skewed and is kind of rotate along the penis, who is relatively well developed, but in some groups quite not. So, and also, then when I was doing that, I realized that the first and the second ventral are always solidly fused, and the line between those segments is absolutely gone. And also there was a study on the coccinellate pupae, and they had one pupa of this group, and this pupa doesn't have urogomphy, and this is a very unique character in the whole Cerulean series, because most of those pupae definitely are anchored in the last larval skin, and they have pretty well developed urogomphy. So there are three major tribes belong to this Microvisiani. There's about 20 genera. There is the Serangiani, who are the white flies predators, and they are very, very highly specialized groups. Microvisiani themselves, this is the genus from Chile. And what Sasagi has described in his first paper, actually, is the tribe Sukuna Hikonini. He described the genus Sukuna Hikona, and then Hikona Sukuna. They're from Taiwan and from Japan, but unfortunately the genus Sukuna Hikona had to be synonymized because the advisor described the genus from Africa in some other Scimniini group. So, but the tribe is still there. So there are about the other coccinellates are characterized by the complex and basically symmetrical tegmen. I'll just pass through some major groups in this that we know are monophyletic, and it looks from both morphology and molecular data. These are the epilacnines that are very well known. They are always hairy and feeding on the plants. They have split, usually two or three kind of toothed claws. Always apex of mandible is modified in both larvae and adults. Usually the female genitalia are modified as well, and the larvae have V-shaped frontal suture and usually epicranial stem. The true coccinellini, the beautiful ones, those are the external predators. They are really moving on the surface of the plants. Those larvae have very long legs, usually very aposematic colors. They have a lot of chemicals in them. Some Southern American ones have a very nicely pectinate club. They have very unique character, actually. They have extra glands associated with the female ovipositor that we don't know the function of, but all of them have. This is the strongest anapomorphic for all big coccinellini. Some of them are feeding on a true bugs, and there is an interesting paper from Dejean that the larvae of this Anisolemnia actually have a very long front legs, and they have to lift the true bugs. These are the nymphs who are sclerotized dorsally, and they actually kind of lifting them up and biting into the belly. So really very, very interesting behavioral pattern. Some of those coccinellines actually are feeding on the mildew, and both larvae and adults have very interesting modified comb-like apices of mandibles. And they also, some of those go on the spores. So they could go on the spores and the pollen, and sometimes they just can go on a mildew very, very well. The next group, which is also well defined, are trilocurines. This is the group that a lot of biological control agents are coming from. They have very expanded clypeus, and antenna is inserted under the clypeus, and usually they have very kind of a globular body. Most of them are completely shiny, but there is one genus, Trichorcus, in Australia, which is completely hairy. Unfortunately, we know only two specimens of that, and we don't know what it does. The larvae are also very characteristic. They've got this processes, this what they call parascoli, and they have defensive glands in a membranes between the abdominal segments, which are heavily sclerotized outlets. The group that has been studied by Juanita Forrester, the Noviani, used to be three genera, now there is only one genus there. A famous Vidalia beetle, Rhodalia cardinalis, belongs here. We have been exported here. They are all feeding probably on a cottony cushion scale on Icerea and all this Megarodalis, the big one. Very interesting group. Also, there's one of the few groups of coccinellis, actually the pupa stays. It is not only breaks the last larval skin, but it stays inside there, in Trilocorania the same. All the residue of all the coccinellis that we don't know exactly where they belong, they are usually mostly the scale feeders. They're usually hairy things. Some of those actually are feeding on aphids like Skimnus, but there is probably, I don't know, 25 tribes that we can probably kind of define more or less morphologically. But once you get to the groups like Skimnus, Rhizobius, and when you look at across the world, it's just impossible. The genus Rhizobius that my collaborator Violetta is now revising is about 100 species worldwide, and basically this is the last couplet in a key. You go to the key and you remove all other coccinellas, and then what is left is Rhizobius. And we are struggling, really struggling, to find some characters for that group, but it's just definitely not. So there are some interesting biological phenomena associated with ladybirds. This is actually the genus Thalassa, which is classified in Hyperaspidini. That has been found by Dejean and all these other people working on ants. That is a true myrmecophyte. The larvae are being tended by Dolichoderus ants. They are living in ant colony. They pupate in ant colony, but we don't know exactly, and they couldn't find what they live on, what is the host, actually, how they get in there. But definitely the beetles are being attacked by the ant. So they probably just pupate and then escape, and maybe are being brought from external kind of locations to the ant nest, but we don't know much about it. There is another interesting ant connection is in Australia. This is genus Bucolus that I have found actually feeding on a small Iridium myrmex ant. We still don't know if it's a kind of a specialized predator or maybe just opportunistic, but there's been several cases that we have found, and in a lap and under eucalyptus bark. He's a very small, very flat guy. So of course the reflex bleeding is a very interesting phenomenon that most of the ladybirds do. We don't know exactly if all, but probably most of the higher ladybirds they can do is they can discharge the yellow kind of a not very tasty fluid. I tried it a couple times. It's probably not the poison. It's definitely deterrent because it's kind of a pungent of course, they've got these aposematic colors, and there are some studies saying, well, some birds don't do it, but there are some birds, like sparrow apparently, who likes the ladybird. So there are some conflicting records about how efficient it is. But definitely, epilocanized the plant feeding, they can sequester chemicals from the plants. Some pupae are interesting. They've got a kind of a chemical defense. Also, they have like tinibrionids have got gene traps. And only in coccinellini, again, there's another synapomorphy. They can definitely squeeze the mites or something getting in between those heavily sclerotized edges of those gene traps. And also, there is the whole group of ladybirds, probably unrelated, have all those waxes on top of the larvae and pupae. And those are definitely to suppress the pressure of the ants, because once the ants get to those waxes, they start cleaning themselves, they get occupied, and the larva runs away. So, of course, everybody knows hypodamia convergence in this country. Just the last thing, when I try to kind of make some compilation as to what they do really eat, the most of the ladybirds in worldwide probably go on aphids, then scales, some of the plant feeders, and we still don't know, or maybe some multiple food. But in Australia, for instance, we have very different situation. We have most of the scale feeders, very few aphids, because in the history of Australia, all the aphids that we have now are mostly introduced from the Northern Hemisphere. Before, there were no aphids. There are some native aphids, but are very hard to come by. And the ladybirds, the true ladybirds, which is about 60 species only, they were feeding mostly on psyllids. And still some harmonias, and they have to feed on psyllids before they go on aphids, actually, to feed them. And this is Adriano Giorgi kind of a progress tree that we are working on. And what we are trying to recover, this is based on molecular data, we are recovering really the coccinellini, and I'm mostly feeding on aphids, but there are some pollen and some other feeders. We are getting the same, those are the two group, the microvisani I was talking about. We are recovering some of the groups, but not very much. Thank you very much. I would like to thank you.